Hello everyone, this is Yara Stark. Welcome to a group mastermind coaching call for Become a Blogger, Blog Mastermind, Membership Site Mastermind, and any of our other VIP members. Gideon and I are here today to answer any of your questions on internet marketing, blogging, video marketing, any aspect of online business, or really anything you can come up with. We'll do our best to help you and draw upon our experience to give you an answer that sets you in the right direction. And no questions should be considered too hard or too easy, so don't be afraid to ask whatever is challenging you at this time. The call is now being recorded, so anything you do say on this call will be redistributed to other people in a recording. In that case, you may wish to either use a fake name or not mention your name if you're worried about privacy issues, but I do encourage you to mention your website when you ask your question, as it is a way to get a little bit of traffic and exposure for what you do. The line is now muted, and in a moment I will turn on lecture mode. Once lecture mode is active, you will have the ability to raise your hand. So at the moment, I'm actually staring at a back-end admin screen that shows me everyone who's on this call. And what you can do is once the lecture mode is on, you'll be able to hit the *9 key. That's the star and then the 9 key on your control pad, either on your Skype or your telephone. And that will raise your hand in my admin panel. And then one by one, we'll go through everyone's questions. What we try and do with these calls is get through every person's question as long as you have one or two or three questions. If you have more than two or three questions, we prefer if you ask your first one or two or three and then give other people a chance, and you can raise your hand again later during the call so we can try and move through people and everyone gets a chance to have their questions answered without having to wait 2 or 3 hours before it's their turn. So the other things to make note of is we have a chat room going along with this live call. So if you didn't see it already, it's actually on the same page where you got the phone number for this call. It's the teleconferences page. So that's at my blog, entrepreneurs-journey.com/teleconferences. And there's some people already in there using the chat room. All you have to do is type your name and then just press the enter button there and you'll be taken inside the chat room. The chat functions more as an area for all the listeners to the call to communicate with each other and often help each other with questions. However, it's not for questions specifically for us. That's myself and Gideon. We like to answer questions on the live call. So if you do have any questions, jump on the call and raise your hand. But you are welcome to communicate with people in the chat room and just chat or help other people out or ask questions. But bear in mind, we will only answer them on the live call. All right. I think that's everything. The only other area we do have is the questions in the forums. If you could not make this call, we will be answering your question during the call. From within the questions for mentors forum. When you go into that forum in the private members forum section, you will see an area where you can leave questions in advance for these calls. We also provide a link to that forum in the email we send you reminding you when this call is coming up. So if you can ever not make a call or you're a bit shy about talking live on a call, you can actually have your question typed in there in advance and we'll answer. And you can either listen live or listen to the recording later on to hear our responses. Okay, I think I've covered everything. Gideon, welcome.
Welcome, Yaro, and everybody else. Looking forward to the call.
Great stuff. Okay, so since everything is covered, I'm going to switch this over to lecture mode. Give me 2 seconds. All right, we are now in lecture mode, which means anyone listening to this call can now press star and then 9, and your hand will be raised on the control panel, and then I'll give you a chance to ask your question. What happens when I click your hand? You should receive an audible notification that your line is active, and then you can just say hello and ask your question, and it'll be a direct line between myself, Gideon, and your phone. So I've got a couple of questions already, so we'll get started.
Hello, Gideon Yaro. My first question is probably a Yaro question since it's very overly analytical. So I had a question about your blog mastermind video, what we're in now, to become a blogger. And do you feel if you turn that into an info product and assuming the prices were equivalent that you would make the same amount of money with it as an info product versus how you're doing it now as a video coaching program?
Are you referring to the videos inside Become a Blogger?
Yes, like that, that total program, if you decided to one day, if you decide to turn into an info product, do you feel that it could have made the same amount of money, just given the caveat it was, you know, priced appropriately?
Okay, you have to clarify, because at the moment we would call it an info product because it's selling information. So I think you're talking about a different format of info product. Do you mean not selling it as a membership, or
yes, like selling it on your website as, you know, someone could get a suite of, you know, the 60 videos and just, you know, buy now in that format.
Well,
like it would be the same exact format, but they would just go to a a page with that listed, and they just buy it and just get all 60 videos at once versus going through a course.
It's actually an option right now. You can join Become a Blogger by paying a one-time fee, and you'll have access to everything up front. So what we generally do, and this is what I teach in Membership Site Mastermind, is the first time you create a course, it's a good strategy to build it as you're teaching it to the first group of students, your charter members. So all the programs I've done have had a group of students go through the program, and I've only really been one module ahead of them, or one lesson ahead of them, or in Become a Blogger's case, Gideon and I were only a couple of videos ahead of the active students. So for the first 6 months or whatever duration your membership site is, you're building your course. And that's really good because it gives you feedback from live members. It means you get paid as you do the work, so you don't have to sort of worry about building the entire course up front and then seeing if it sells. You can try and sell it first and then build it as you're going along with them. So we do that, and then once the first run is done, so you've got your 6 months or whatever over and you've completed your course, depending if you closed it, like that's what we do with our programs, we shut them down. So when we go to reopen it again, since we have all the materials available, we then sell it with an option to either pay monthly and get the lessons or the videos or whatever on a sequential basis, or pay one-time fee and get all the materials up front. And in that case, it's like exactly as you're describing. So that's a strategy that's worked really well for us. And the upfront option often is taken almost as much as the monthly option. So it's a good way to get your cash flow, you know, right up front. And I honestly, it made a huge difference compared to having it as a monthly option. But I guess that's answered your question. So,
that's really good feedback. But I guess you don't have the model where you have an online store and someone could buy that at any time. Do you think that would work? You know, someone just goes, you know, just like an ebook was on your site, someone could just go and buy Become a Blogger.
Yeah, I understand.
Anytime they wanted to, and it's all videos.
Yeah, you're kind of talking like commoditizing it or something like that, where it's just like an item in a shopping cart. And you could do that. And, you know, we're talking only about, I guess, you're wrapping around a different distribution and a different psychology behind essentially the same product. So there's not a difference there other than the way people perceive what you're selling. And in that case, a launch is always done best. And we can tell you right now, we have Become a Blogger open. We have a banner on our site that people can click and go straight to the sales page, or they go straight to our free content, which takes them eventually to the sales page. And that's, you know, all designed to first give people some great value up front, asking for nothing in return, and then saying, if you want more, please, you know, consider buying our product. That works better than just having an item listed in a shopping cart. It's just better psychology behind the marketing process. You know, you're building rapport, you're building an audience, you're drip feeding them value before you're asking for anything in return. And if you tie that into a launch process where you've got things like scarcity and urgency because of deadlines, and you've got bonuses and all these additional things, that's when you get much better sales numbers. That's why you do a launch. So to really answer your question, I wouldn't, definitely not the first time, go out the door with just adding my product to a shopping cart, unless I was certain that, you know, that's what I wanted to do. For, I have to have a very good reason. Maybe it's a very low end product. It's like $10. It's just 10 videos or something like that. And there's no real reason to do a huge launch for that kind of product. And I'm just going to do a bunch of $10 products inside a shopping cart. And that's okay. You could do that. It's worth testing, but, you know, in all the testing we've done so far, by far our launches that open and then close, they're the ones that have done far and away the best for us.
Oh, Okay, thank you. And I guess my next question is, I know that you recommend, you know, everyone recommends getting JV partners or to help market, but one of my, I guess, fears is that if, you know, I get 10 JV partners, are you ever in a situation where, you know, then they all want you to, you know, of course, pay back the favor, and then I don't want my business to where all I do is just launch my products, and then I'm obligated to market to 10 other JVs who market mine. I mean, is that an issue within the marketplace? If you're just always marketing someone else's or yourselves all day long?
Yeah, well, the law of reciprocity is an issue, if you want to call it that, and obviously you want to maintain relationships with your best joint venture partners. But what I can tell you from what we've experienced, only at best five affiliates of, you know, of 1,000, maybe not quite that much, but 5 of 100 are going to get a result that is significant, in which case you're going to feel that compulsion to return the favor at some point. So just if you have 10 affiliates, maybe one of them will make enough sales. And, you know, there's no rules here that you don't have, you have to follow unless you choose to. So if you have an affiliate promote for you and they make zero sales, are you going to be you know, feeling like you owe a promotion back? You might if they sent you a lot of leads. If they didn't do anything for you, though, you're probably not going to feel that sense of reciprocity. And there's other things as well there, though, you know, the applicability of their product to your audience. So, you know, I've had some people promote my product and then come to me asking for a return, and I've just not been able to promote it because it just, I know it doesn't convert. It's in a completely different market to what my audience usually wants. A good example, I might have someone who's in the, you know, the law of attraction industry come and promote my product as a great blogging tool for those who, you know, want to make money and then use the law of attraction to do so. And then if they want me to return the favor and promote their law of attraction product, I say no, because I've tested that and doesn't convert for my audience. They're not interested in buying products in that area. And I tell them that, you know, I'm going to be upfront with them. But if it's a top affiliate, you know, if it's like a, you know, I spent many years cultivating relationships with top affiliates like, you know, Frank Kern and Jeff Walker and Rich Sheffrin. And when these guys promote, often they don't promote you unless you've already promoted them and made sales for them. So it's a bit of a catch-22. You probably, if you're coming in on your back foot, like you're not established yet, it's probably the other way around. You've done some promotion for them and you're hoping that you've made enough sales that they then feel obligated to promote for you. And that's the more powerful strategy to go for here if you're not already established yourself. But what you're talking about is definitely an issue. I've felt that sort of stress where I don't want to over market to my list. And I know, Gideon, you'd feel the same with what we've been doing with Become a Blogger, where we've been uncomfortable and we've had to say no sometimes.
Absolutely. And I think a pretty good reason to think about ways that you can build your own audience more and more. Because if you can get to a critical mass stage where you've built up your own audience, you don't actually need affiliates as much anymore. And so if you can set up your business, your online business, in such a way that you have some sort of a lead generating mechanism over a period of time, you can get to a point where you don't need affiliates anymore. And that can be a pretty amazing space to be in if you can pull that off. But initially, you may need that help to get you up and running. But it's tough, you know, because, you know, you want, you know, just as people promote for you, you want to reciprocate that action often. And but it, in a way, you know, it makes you money when you do affiliate promotions. It's great. But I always look at it and I always feel a bit of pain when I do it, because even though there's money coming in, I also know for a fact that the people on my list is getting on someone else's list. And that's a problem, because now all of a sudden they're not just getting emails from me, they're also getting emails from the affiliate and any other affiliates that they might promote for. And so what happens is it dilutes your message. You know, and no longer is it just your message in the inbox. You know, in that 1 or 2 months' time, it's like messages from 10 or 20 different internet marketers, and you just get flooded out with everyone else. So it's as Yara was saying, it's a catch-22. It's a trade-off as well. So you've got to think how you want to do it. But initially, I mean, in a way, you kind of have to do it if you want to build up your audience. But if you can find a way that you can just build it yourself, build your own audience yourself without affiliates, I mean, that I think that's the holy grail if you can do it, but it's very difficult.
Okay. I see what you're saying, because I know everyone uses them. Just, you know, for mass outsource, for example, I did get, you know, everyone promoted that product, but I guess John Reese wouldn't feel obligated to necessarily have to promote all those people's products unless they were, you know, top.
Yeah. Now, look,
I've
made some pretty good sales for some pretty, you know, big launches in the past. And, you know, I would send these people an email and I wouldn't even get anything, you know, I wouldn't even get a return email back, even for something as simple as an interview. So, you know, these guys, the guys at the top of the food chain, you know, they're, I'm not sure if I would say they're arrogant, but I mean, they probably get an email from one of their affiliates, one of their hundreds or thousands of affiliates almost every day to ask them to promote something. And from their point of view, it's just not feasible or practical to even respond to most people. And so they're in the privileged position where they can go, all right, I've got some really good opportunities here, but I'm going to let them go, and I'm going to go only for the great opportunities. And that's, you know, that's what you're up against when you're when you do promote for the big guys, and if you want to get them to promote back for you, it's very difficult sometimes.
Okay. Well, thank you guys. It really was good, deep insight from both of you.
No problem.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay, I'm going to jump to a forum question, and then we'll go back to the live question. So hold on. I'll read this one out. I think this is for both of us. Gideon?
Sounds good.
Okay. Hi, Yarrow and Gideon. You guys are my ideas men, so I thought I would come to you. My father and I have started a new site called Cutting Horse Link. It is found at cuttinghorselink.com. Cutting Horses is a competition that originated in America and is popular in Australia. We soft launched in 6 weeks ago, but want to make an impact at the Australian Futurity Championship at the end of the month. We have business cards set up and I will be blogging live. Dad is going to interview people. Have you any other ideas to drum up some more momentum about this site? Cheers from Ainsley. Cool. All right. I'm opening up the link, but you can go first if you want to get in. Cuttinghorselink.com. I'll just put that in the chat room for anyone who's listening in.
Okay. I think the first thing that comes to mind for, you know, getting more exposure for something like this is what we've just talked about, and that is finding other people who already has or have access to a lot of other people. So in the internet marketing space, it's people with email lists in the internet marketing space. So they, you know, you'd approach those people to help you launch something and get more exposure really quickly. That's, I mean, that is bar none still the best strategy for getting massive exposure really, really quickly. I'm not aware of any other strategy that can help you get traffic so quick and is qualified traffic. So what you need to do for cuttinghorselink.com is to find other people in your industry. And that can be either online or offline. It doesn't have to be just online. And figure out a way that you could work together with them somehow to help you get more exposure. Either give them a cut in the sales you make or whatever, or work something else out. But that could be a very fast way to help you get real quick exposure for this.
Gideon,
yeah?
Could you maybe talk about what you and JJ have done regarding press coverage, because you've done pretty well there.
Press coverage. I guess that's been more, you mean offline press?
Yeah, like PR, because I thought this might be a good one for this sort of industry, because there must be some sort of offline horse-related media.
Yeah, that's an interesting other strategy. Yeah, it's more been JJ driving that part of it, but what he actually did was he hired a part-time personal or public relations person that is, you know, he's paying her a monthly fee, and her main job is to find public relation events or to find people in the media that can you know, get the word out about JJ for his magic in this particular case. And it's been pretty good. I mean, it means that JJ didn't have to worry about that side of it. He could just keep on doing what he does with his magic. And in the background, his PR lady would, you know, find all the connections, you know, do all the, releases of information or press releases, and, you know, get a few front page type of, you know, situations where JJ was in front of some local newspapers, this sort of thing, you know, or a spread in the middle of the some of the magazines and this sort of thing. So just giving extra exposure. And so what it does, that does two things. Number one, it helps you get extra exposure, but number two, it gives you that credibility. Because the more publications you can be in, when you go and approach other people, you show them those publications, or you put those publications on your website and say, "Hey, look, I've appeared in these publications. You know, I'm not just a nobody. People have taken notice." And that gives you that nice credibility. So that's, I guess, what JJ's been doing with that PR lady. So if you can find someone like that who already has some connections in the marketplace for those PR opportunities, that can definitely help you a lot to increase the awareness of what you're doing.
And along the same line, I did something similar without a press publicist. I just went to a news agent and found all the magazines in my industry, and then I went online and found all the sort of mainstream publications and just found any editor contacts and had a sort of a template email saying, "Hi, my name is Yarrow. I run a proofreading business. This is obviously not for my blogging. This is for my proofreading business that I had in the mid-2000s. And we run, you know, this is what we do. Here's a little press release around it." So I attached that or included it. I often included like short blurbs that they could use as well. And I sent that off to about maybe 20, 30 journalists. And I ended up getting, I think, about two or three little spot coverages in local magazines. Actually, some were national magazines. One of them was a nationally printed magazine in Australia. So you don't know until you ask, and you don't have to use a publicist, but it just takes your own time, obviously, if you don't. But the publicist is great because they have contacts. And the reason why I asked Gideon to talk about that is I think if you're in a hurry, that's one of the better ways to, I guess, have a time-based impact in an industry, especially if it doesn't have a lot of online avenues. I don't know much about the horse industry, so I'm not sure what kind of media sites are available online and how quickly they publish content and if you can make an impact there. But that would be the areas I'd be doing. So we've got affiliate marketing, we've got publicizing some things, you know, find a hook around what you're doing around your website. Everything else is kind of slow. You've got your search engine optimization, but that takes time. You know, you've got a content strategy that also takes time, and they're kind of like one and the same. So I'd be just looking at anything that's quick if that's what's important for this site and the impact you're going to have on the Australian Futurity Championship at the end of this month. So that's obviously only in about 2 or 3 weeks. So you have to do quick whatever you're doing. Anything else, Gideon?
I think, this could work for you because it's, you know, perhaps something that's more visual as well. I'm not sure how you tie this in, but to use something like YouTube, if you don't have a channel yet, you know, start creating some smaller, you know, short videos on what you're doing. Now you've got to think about how you can make that attractive for your audience to look at. But YouTube, once again, is a huge audience. It's global, so I'm not sure if you're just trying to attract a local sort of a crowd, but you know, there's certainly a global audience there available that you can access, and you know, I've certainly found YouTube to be a very great tool for getting exposure. And once again, it's a bit like blogging; it's not necessarily something that you can get quick exposure in, but if you build it up over a 6 month to a year period, you can get some pretty good exposure.
Okay, hope that answered your question, Ainsley. It's ideas you're after, so there's some. We're going to jump back to the live questions now. Here we go. Hello, caller. You are live.
Hey, Yarrow. How are you doing? It's Monique.
Hi, Monique. How are you?
Sorry, I had the call muted, so I had to unmute it real quick.
Okay.
All right. I just want to give you an update on what I did since last time, I guess. And
okay.
Then I guess go into where we can go from the last call.
Go for
Is
it.
Is that okay? Go for
okay.
it. Okay. The thing that you told me that I need to develop is a content strategy, okay? So I decided that I didn't want to use, like, any of my existing blogs to launch the membership site off of. So I came to the conclusion that I should have, like, a website with my own name. So I made another WordPress blog under my own name, and then I also went about getting the capture page done for the actual product website. So, like, okay, I like how you go from, like, GideonShowick.com, but all your products are on, like, a separate domain. So I'm trying to follow, like, that same structure and have, like, Monique.com and then have LiveEventMastermind.com, where I would use the MoniqueWaite.com to kind of build up, to kind of be my hub, and then use the LiveEventMastermind.com to launch the product off of. Do you think that's a good idea? Hello?
Who's the question directed to? Monique?
Oh, both of you.
I agree. I'll throw that out. I love that. So thumbs up for me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, did you have a question?
No,
I was just
going.
I was just gonna agree with that as well. It's a good strategy because you keep it nice and clear, and you can brand each specific product in its own way. It's a nice way of doing it.
Okay. So I went through the AWeber. I have an AWeber account, and so I put just like the welcome message, and then just a blank follow-up email with I'm going to send you the report. So let me put the link in the chat because Eduardo had asked about this, so I can just share with everybody. I don't mind sharing. So let me put the link
okay.
in there. I wouldn't normally share all this stuff, but considering the class, I'll go ahead and share. So this was like done like today. I went through the provider Wow Mini Sites, and they did like the video capture page because I've done that before on my own, but I just needed something that looked really, really good. Like if I'm going to be having people pay for this, I really want it to look good. So, but the thing is that the wall that I'm hitting is like where we left off last time is for the report. I've got about 30, 40 pages of information about like live event planning. And soon after we talked last, I decided, okay, I'm going to name the report The 9 Harsh Realities of Live Event Planning. And when I went to the graphic designer and I saw it on the cover, I was like, well, that sounds a little negative. So I said, well, let me change it to something else. So I have like all this information that was centered around this whole idea of the 9 harsh realities of live event planning. And then I changed it, the title, to the 24-hour live event planning guide, where it goes in like if you only had 24 hours to plan a live event, like how you would go about it. But I guess where I'm struggling right now is who am I talking to? When I joined the course, I was thinking that I would be creating like a teaching program, and it would be something that like, okay, so like outsource force, like you have Angela working on hiring people for you based on information from the outsource force course, right? So you give Angela access to outsource force, and then you say, okay, I want you to go do this. I want you to go hire people based on these guidelines. So I guess what I was thinking I was going to create was giving all the instructions of how to plan the live event that could be passed on to, say, online business owners, like, internal team. Does that make sense?
Yes.
that makes sense. But then on the call, you were saying that you personally would prefer like a service. And I guess where I'm getting blocked is seeing how like a service provider would tie into the membership site model, business model. Like I'm trying to figure that out.
I think, yeah, what we were talking about last call with in regards to doing it as a service was more a means to do a real experience trial run, or not really a trial run, an actual run of helping someone set up an event, just so you can get a solid understanding in this industry. I'm assuming you're planning on helping internet marketers or people, you know, in this sort of space plan their live events. And you said most of your live event experience had been at university, I believe. Wasn't that right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
yes, that's
so
right.
it was more a case of offer it as a service first. And then once you've done it a few times, you feel like you really get where the your customer is coming from. So you understand, okay, this is where their sticking points are. This is where they should be outsourcing. This is where I could put in the manual to get them to then hand to their team and have all this handled for them. That would be the generally the process most people go through. It's the same as why I built a blog first and made money from it first, doing all the work myself, then went and made some changes, had people help me, and then start teaching. So it's like an obvious sequence of events. And I think you'll find that in almost any industry, even though, like John Reese with Outsource Force, he went through first and spent years doing his own outsourcing and then eventually started building teams and, the teams outsourced for him. So it's like a very typical development path everyone goes through to gain the initial experience and awareness of what they're trying to hopefully eventually teach. And it just makes sense. So the good thing about it is you can get paid to do that. It just means you have to do some labor to begin with. So in your case, just put yourself out there first as a service provider. As a result of providing the service, you'll hopefully create manuals and guides and things delivering that service. You'll get paid for it all. And you take all that stuff, and then as well as whatever you want to teach live, maybe you'll do webinars, maybe you do video, whatever it is, then you'll create the membership site. And then from that point on, you can just sell the membership site, or you can do both if you want. A lot of people still do high-end consulting even when they have a membership site, and that's what your service may eventually become. It's $10,000 to hire me for your event, or you can just buy my course for $500, different pricing points in your sales funnel.
Okay.
That's the way I go about it.
Okay. Now, since we talked last, I did prepare like a budget to do like just a basic two-hour presentation event at one of the hotels near me, which would mean I would have to charge maybe like $10 a person for 50 people or something to cover the cost of the facility, assuming that I don't do food. The only reason why I haven't done it yet is because their available dates were like May 7th, May 21st, and May 28th. May 7th was the same day as a local university's graduation, because I live in a college town. So that was a bad day because it's graduation. And then this week we have graduation. And then the 21st and the 28th, like all the students are gone. So it's kind of like a dead town again. So I guess do you think I should try to go the webinar route first?
Who are you trying to get into these? What's the target customer here? If you're going to run a live event in your hometown, who do you want to attract to it?
I guess it would be local business owners that either are not happy with their web presence or want to expand their web presence.
Okay, and is this so you can gain experience running an event?
Pretty much.
Okay, so you're running an event on the internet in the hopes to learn how to run a live event.
Well, no. The event on the internet is to establish a rapport with people before they come and meet with me live.
Okay, and what will you teach them once they meet with you live?
That's the part that I'm not sure about, because like when you brought up the whole service part, like how would I don't know how I would reach them. Like I understand like how I would reach like somebody that wants to do like an event planning business or something like that and is looking for like instructions on how to do that. but the market of providing as a service, I'm not quite sure how do I reach those people.
Well, I know, as an example, Joanna Martin is a speaker trainer in, well, she travels around the world, but she's an Australian, and she teaches people how to sell from the stage. Her background, among many things, is the event coordinator for Christopher Howard, who you may know is kind of like an Anthony Robbins-style teacher and live event presenter. So she got a ton of experience on how to create live events and you know, make lots of sales by being his coordinator for his events and learning from what he does and studying his methods and so forth. Now, I don't know how she got into that slot with Christopher Howard, but you know, if I was you and I wanted to do this, I would first of all go. I'd probably start a blog and keep doing what you're doing with the Live Event Mastermind Report. The thing with the Live Event Mastermind Report, you're heading towards a membership site there, but you don't have, like, you know, the whole reason we're having this discussion is for you to build up some credibility and some status and some experience helping people run live events in the internet marketing niche. So I'd be going out there with the blog and pitching yourself as a consultant, an event coordinator for people who want to run internet marketing events. And if it means for the first one that you volunteer, just to get the doorway in and something on your resume, then that's okay. I don't know whether you're willing to do that, but or even just selling yourself, I will do this and this when you want to host your live event, and it's going to cost you this. And then just doing traditional online marketing to get your name out there as a live event coordinator. You're selling a service. So SEO, just do phone calls, email people, release videos, start teaching people how to do these things, and eventually they'll start wanting to hire you. Just like right now, people would, if Gideon and I said, Gideon said, I'm going to hire himself out as a video consultant, as like providing a service, he would do that through his blog and people would hire him. I'd say, all right, I'm going to help people by building their blogs for them and doing that. Then I'd sell it through my blog. And that's kind of what I do with my elite coaching right now. So it's a case of deciding what you want to provide to people and then marketing it. And then once you've done that, that's when you can create the membership site behind that. And unless, of course, right now you feel like you've got enough credibility that you would have affiliates and people who are ready to promote what you can teach about how to run a live event.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, if I can put in my two cents worth as well.
Yes.
I'm just putting together a new course as we speak that I'll be launching over the next few weeks, and the first module that I'm going through is, I've had to revisit this because I understand that it's important for people, and it's about niche selection, but it's also more than that. But as I was putting the course together, I was thinking, if I look at what Yaro's done, what I have done, and what JJ has done, I guess they're really the three case studies that are really close to us. For all three of them, there was a core skill that was developed, and we were only able to create an information product about that core skill once that core skill was first developed. So I'll give you an example. So with JJ, for example, his core skill is magic and performing magic. So he loves entertaining people. That's what he's passionate about. But he has developed a really, really powerful and strong skill in magic. Card tricks, coin tricks, tricks with props, knowing how to entertain people. So that's a skill that is developed over a number of years. Now, so he used that and became an expert in that particular skill. I would say he's one of the best in the world at what he does. But the next stage was then to say, okay, how can he make money from that? And one of the ways was for him to do live performances, which he was doing. But then he approached me and said, hey, look, I'm trying to look for a leverage point. How can I increase this? How can I get more exposure? And I said, okay, well, let's create a membership site based on your skill, essentially. So we're going to teach other people to become like you. So you've already gone through it. You've built up your skill as a magician. And now we're going to teach other people. And you're going to be the teacher, by the way, because you've developed the skill already and you are qualified now to teach that to other people. And it was exactly the same situation for myself, with the video stuff. I first had to do the hard yards to figure out all the ins and outs of it over the last 4 years to become an expert at it, a total expert. So, and now that I've got a skill in it, that I've, you know, I've really polished it, I can now position myself as an expert, as an authority, and I can create a course on it and say, hey, look, here are my results. This is what I've done. And, you know, I'm skillful at this. And because I'm skillful, I'm allowed to teach you about this. So with that sort of approach, you have a lot more authority and credibility when you do it. And the tricky thing, of course, is that it takes time. But it doesn't have to be time where you don't earn any money. You know, like Yara was saying, you can actually earn money while you do it. With my video stuff, you know, I started off with doing some sort of consultancy work. I did some videos for other people and they paid me per hour. And while I didn't enjoy the work, it was, you know, just bringing in money. And the next stage was to, you know, to do the project with Yara, where I once again did a lot of online video, but I got a lot of experience and we made a lot of money from that. But it was still not teaching my skill. I was just using my skill for that. And now that I'm finally at a level where I can say, look, I've been through this, I've built up the skill, and I've shown results. Now I've got credibility. Now I can say, okay, I can now teach you how to do this. And so that is a possible way to look at this for you as well.
Okay. So I have another question. So you said that Gideon and Yara, you said you were interested in doing a live event. What has been your barrier to actually having that done? Because I guess I feel like there are a lot of other entrepreneurs online that want to do live events. Like, what was the guy's name? Oh, my goodness. He had the video SEO. What was his name? On your blog, Gideon, you had the video SEO guy, not...
Leslie Rohde?
No. Recent, like this week.
David Jennings.
Oh, David Jennings. Exactly. Right, yes.
He also does just like a 1 or 2 hour workshop on SEO locally. And right. He records that. Like, that's the same kind of thing that I want to do. So explain to me, like, what have been like some of the things that you've needed to overcome to do something like that? Because, I mean, that sounds like something, you know, I would want to be involved in.
I think that, I mean, it's a lot of it is probably just perceived issues for us. And maybe we, you know, we haven't even looked at it enough to really know whether it's an issue. But one thing that's always come up in my mind, at least, is how to get what, you know, what we call over in this part of the world, bums on seats, you know, how to get people to the actual event. Especially for something local. Now, Yara and I have, you know, most of our audiences in the United States, but we also do have people on our list from just locally in Australia. But still, it's, you know, it's not necessarily big enough to fill up a room of, you know, 500 people. So for us, that was one concern, is to think about how can we get bums on seats. And, you know, we have options. We could ask other people here who run events if they want to promote for us. But are there other ways? That was one thing. And the other thing that, you know, we've discussed before already is, as well, is that, you know, we don't necessarily want to be involved in setting up the event. We basically just want to turn up. And we want to have someone there, like an events coordinator or an events manager, that he or she, they make sure that things happen. They make sure that people come to the event. They make sure the room is ready, or, you know, they don't have to do it themselves. They just make sure that it gets done. And then basically for me and Yaro, because we'll be the teachers at the event, we don't want to be bogged down with all the details of the event. We just want to turn up and speak and interact with the people. That's what we want to do. So getting that one person has been an issue for us to find the right person. So and as I said before, a lot of it is probably more of a perceived issue than a real issue, and we just need to look into it more. But, you know, that's perhaps a place where you could come in to give advice on something like that.
Because, I mean, if that's something that you're really interested in and want to get more leverage on it, I mean, I would certainly be interested in supporting that. I mean, you know, because, you know, I'm getting all this information and learning more about how to get people there and stuff like that. So I would certainly be willing to help with that, big time. And I guess, you know, one of the things that, you know, I guess I'm just waiting on is getting people that I work with before to kind of vouch for me and say, yes, we've worked with her before and things like that, like on my blog and do some interviews, to kind of build up my credibility. But, that sounds like something that I would definitely be interested in. That was one of the issues why I don't have my ebook done yet, because I realize it's two different dialogues, how you would speak to the audience that's wanting to learn about how to become an event planner and the audience that's wanting to hire for services. It's two different dialogues. So
I think go ahead, get in.
It does sound like you, you do need that, I guess, proof of credibility to show people that you've run events yourself before and that you know what you're doing. You know, that I think Yaros pointed that out already. You need to have that first. And so for that matter, it can, you know, if you can run one successful event, say an internet marketing event, that would give you incredible credibility, because then from that point onward, you can always keep on referring back to that. You know, when you want to teach people how you did it, you can say, look, this is what I did. I went through these steps to plan it. These are the issues that I came up with. And you know, these are the results that I ended up getting, and I want to teach you how I did it. Because without that, it's very difficult to say, you know, to convince people that you know what you're doing. So you need that initial, I guess, success story that you could base a lot of your course on.
Does the market really matter? Because I feel like I already have that, like with the career fair. Like, to me, an event is an event and is an event. Like, it's the same process. Like, you wouldn't say, I can't teach you about become a blogger because you want to blog about carrots rather than blogging about make
right.
money.
Yeah.
So
that's a good point.
I guess I feel like I have that with me, and I can certainly work on, you know, go into the exhibitors and, because, I mean, they remember me, and they're like, oh, you know, our events haven't been the same since you graduated, or the parking services people, or the event planners for the local hotels that I had to work with. So I have connections there locally, which I don't mind working with my preeminence plan that's in Module 1 with developing, like, some interviews with people that I've already worked with to kind of build the preeminence, as you would say. But do you think people really care that it's in a different market? Because, like, I don't want to do social events because people don't pay to go to a wedding. People don't pay to go to a birthday party. Mm-hmm. Like, I want to do, like, business and corporate events because people pay to come there. And you basically get paid up front to actually do the event. You just have to open up your registration and say when it's going to be, where it's going to be, and then provide the service from then on. But people are paying to come. So do you think it really does make a big difference? Because I was going to kind of gloss over the fact that it was a career fair, but mainly talk about the process that I went through to get from no event to a 100 company career fair.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, absolutely, that is great. If you already have that credibility and that proof of previous results, that's awesome. That's so you can use that, absolutely. Of course, if it was an event in the internet marketing space, which is what you want to end up teaching, right? That
yes.
would add extra credibility. But
okay.
Just like you were saying, it's a good example that you used with Become a Blogger. We teach people how to blog, but, you know, they can blog in any area. Yeah, it can be, well, for example, about magic, for example, or about online video. So definitely there are some key principles that would be the same for everybody. But then there would also be more specific principles for a specific niche, like how to run internet marketing events specifically. Because they, you know, it might have their own flavor just because it's specifically focused on that one thing, but there will also be the general stuff that's the same for all events. So I think you can definitely use that absolutely to help you get that credibility. So there's two ways of doing this. You can already just use that credibility and put together your course and just keep on building from that point onwards. Or you could try and arrange for one more event where it's got this internet marketing focus and then say, okay, I've been a planner for many years or whatever. I've done many, many things. Now, by the way, I've done this internet marketing event as well. So I have experience in that also, and that's what I want to teach you.
Okay.
But I wouldn't say it's essential for you to do that, but it would certainly help.
Okay, I understand what you're saying.
I think Yara also had something to say.
Jump in here. A couple of points. If I was going to run an event right now, and this is what Gideon and I have gone through already, it's the short answer why we haven't run one is we haven't wanted to yet. Like we've chosen other projects before running a live event. You know, we've talked about it several times, but in the end, we always choose a different project instead. So it's the case of lowest hanging fruit and what we want to do personally. Now, when we've started this process and we've gone to start potentially doing our event, we've gone to our immediate peer group on who we think we'd get advice from. And we've gone straight to Joanna Martin, who I mentioned earlier, for some very obvious reasons. She's already made $2 million running live events. So she knows how to sell from the stage and how to run a live event and all the nuances and all that. So she's got incredible proof and made lots of money from it. And we have her as a contact. We've spoken to her personally, and we've helped her before. So we've got that law of reciprocity. So she's going to feel indebted to help us. And we're friends. Simple as that, which is great. Mm-hmm. Now, it's always best to go and get lots of advice from different people if you've got the time to do so. And obviously, you want to get it from credible sources and people you gel with and all that. So I just want to point out the fact that she's, it's made $2 million selling from the stage is a really big credibility boost for us wanting to get her advice and even just believing in what she's saying. Mm-hmm. In your case, what I'd really like to see you do, it's kind of like what David Jennings is doing. He's running short half-day workshops or night workshops on SEO because his business is about SEO and he wants to teach people SEO in live, in person, and that eventually leads into getting SEO clients. Mm-hmm. I would run short events on how to do events. That's what I would personally, if I was you right now, start doing. I would, prepare maybe a 2-hour presentation on what it takes to do a great live event. It doesn't necessarily have to be exactly what you're practicing when you teach it, because obviously I think you're planning on teaching how to run a more substantial live event than a 2-hour workshop. But I'm sure you can use some of your principles in a 2-hour workshop as well to sort of say, so when you're running a live event, you should do this. And as you can see, I'm actually doing it right now as I teach you. And that would be, a good sort of demonstration of you're using your own principles. And at the end of those workshops, you then sell whatever you want to sell, whether it's your information product or whether it's a service like David does with SEO. You could test that. You can try selling different things, maybe a low entry product to get them in the door, like a $50 information product. But whatever the case is, once you've done these little small workshops, you're actually practicing what you preach. And that's really critical. And it's in the internet marketing niche because, well, not technically in the internet marketing niche, but it's in your niche. You're teaching how to do what you do. So that's the credibility you need, and that's the practice you need, the experience you need. That's my gut feeling with this. You could forego all that advice, just go straight out there and launch a membership site based purely on the experience you've got running events for universities and go out there and do a pitch, and if you get great affiliates who love what you're doing, you get lots of traffic and a great offer, and you got great stuff to teach, you can convert well to the internet marketing niche as well. There's nothing wrong with that, but I'm pretty confident as you go through this process to set up your membership site and do your launch, you're going to notice certain gaps in the information you can provide, as well as your ability to convert a sale, because you're just missing a lot of the trigger points. You won't have case studies to talk about from your client who sells sells online a course on how to sell golf clubs. And they decided to do a live event on golf clubs, and they made tons of sales from it. They got heaps of customers to their website as well, and you were the one who coordinated their entire live event. And that's great credibility. And people who are in the sporting industry are going to go, this chick knows what she's doing when it comes to live events in our industry. buy everything she's got and let's do a live event and make some money. So there's a lot of what ifs here, but the general rule of marketing is you need these psychological triggers in order to convert the sale. Some of them you just don't have yet. And you could go out there and do the launch and see what happens. You might do fine. So I guarantee you'll get a great experience out of it. So it's up to you, really.
I certainly appreciate that. And I guess I got a little down between like the last call because I was really hoping to have that done like by today. But with graduation, like it's just not feasible to try to do the event last Friday with the same night as graduation. It's just crazy trying to get people to just record it for me because I want to go in when I'm doing my presentation. I want to go in and focus on what I'm saying and not worry about the video equipment and live streaming and all that other stuff. So I'm hoping to really do what you're saying.
What were you going to teach at this event? What were you planning on teaching?
I was going to teach the event planning because I was approached by the sales and marketing staff at the hotel that said they needed that because they're not getting business from like small business owners because they don't know how to plan an event. So they don't know how to plan it. So they're not booking the meeting space. And I said, well, if I can come in, you know, and teach how to plan that, then maybe that'll help you book more meeting space. Because right now, I mean, they weren't even full. I mean, to try to get a room for a whole day on a Friday, like less than a month in advance, I mean, that's pretty hard to do. And they had 3 days on their calendar available. So they needed somebody to help show other people, like, how do I go about planning this? Like, is this feasible for me to do this for my business? So that's what I was...
How are you going to get bums on seats? How are you going to get people in the room?
Well, I have a contact with the Small Business Development Center. He has an email list of business owners in the New River Valley in the surrounding counties. And I approached him about putting a message on the email list there. And then I also ran some tests on Facebook to try to get local targeting through Facebook ads and try to target people that are associated with the local chamber of commerce to get those ads showing up in front of those people that specifically have businesses in this area.
Okay, I like this plan, and I think, you know, you're going to face all the challenges that your clients are going to face. So, you know, filling a room is challenging, like you just said before, getting someone to record what you're doing and getting it all set up so you just focus on what you're teaching and less about the ancillary stuff. This is all great learning and great content for the product you're eventually trying to create. So I'd keep going down this path.
Okay. All right. I really, really appreciate it. I'm sorry, Hector. I'm taking up too much time. We can move on to the next person. If I have something else to say, if we have time, we'll go through it. But I really appreciate it, guys. Thank you so, so, so very much.
Thanks, Monique. No problem. Happy to talk to you, Monique. Looking forward to hear what you might have for us next month as well.
Okay, great. Have a good one.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
See ya.
All right, next caller.
Oh, hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Hi, my name's Lou. I'm relatively new to this forum. I just joined Blog Mastermind just 2 days ago and trying to navigate myself through all this, and it's been very good so far. And I have a specific question, and it's refers to Facebook and how you can best leverage or exploit Facebook and what you have through the contacts there, especially in relation to your Facebook business pages, to either get traffic to your blog, or if you are finding that you're getting a lot of people in your Facebook business page that aren't in your target market, how you could best use that. I mean, I'm not complaining about getting a lot of fans on my business page, but they're not quite in the field, or they're not quite the people who would be reading my blog. So how could I best link the two between the blog and the Facebook is what I'm trying to ask.
Okay. I think we'll both have something to say here on this one. we're not, like, this is not an area that I specialize in, and I've only made use of Facebook as an arm extension of my blog, essentially. And I use a combination of Twitter, my blog, and Facebook to pretty much circulate a very similar content. So all my blog posts go to my Facebook page, my fan page, as well as my personal page, and my tweets do the same thing. Now, that's about as concentrated a strategy as I've got. It just means I've got more contact points with people and I've got more ways to build my brand and influence people. It's kind of difficult to really assess the raw return on investment there, and in terms of time spent. It's just something that I do. And I've studied what people are talking about when it comes to Facebook marketing. Katie Farthing recently just did her Unified Tribe launch, and she's big on Facebook marketing and using essentially Facebook and Twitter as viral marketing tools, so just to help get your message to spread further. And the big idea here, it's branding, is what we're basically talking about, is branding. So more people become aware of who you are and what you stand for, and therefore down the line, whenever they have a need related to what you do, you're one of the people they consider straight away simply because of the brand you built up. And I think that's what the most powerful feature of Facebook and Twitter are, is that viral nature of building your brand. It can be a good traffic tool as well. UniqueBlogDesigns.com is one of the people I've seen make use of their Facebook fan page really well as a lead generator, because if you go to their Facebook fan page, which I haven't got the address, but if you type in UniqueBlogDesigns.com into Google, actually probably UniqueBlogDesigns Facebook, and that will pull up their Facebook fan page, you can see that they have an opt-in for their free theme. They have basically replicated the most critical aspects of their website inside their Facebook fan page, so that it functions as another marketing tool. It's got their free themes. It's got a place where you can see the paid themes they sell and go straight to buy them. It's got information that they're publishing from their blog and in general on Facebook about WordPress themes, because that's their niche. So they're using it as, again, another marketing channel. And the key thing here, I think, that a lot of people are missing, though, is how exactly they're getting traffic back to these fan pages or their Facebook page in the first place. In my case, it's all as a side effect of what I do with blogging. So obviously I have a fairly big link that says join my fan page on my blog, and that's driving the majority of the traffic to my Facebook fan page. Other people, they might use their Facebook fan page and mention it in offline marketing. They might, use other marketing tools to then link back to their Facebook fan page. These are all the same things we teach in our blogging courses about getting traffic to your blog can be used to get traffic back to your Facebook page. But, I'd be careful about doing that, because you want to own your page. And that's why we recommend the blog as the main central point. So I think a strategy that what you'll find people like Katie Freiling teach is to go into Facebook and participate. And all the times you are participating, you're bringing back people to your Facebook page as well. So that just means, interacting, commenting, liking things, sharing things with other people within the Facebook community in your space, using it to get in touch with market leaders in your space if they're using Facebook and get on their radar. And it's very holistic. That's the best way I can put it. I think some other people out there, I haven't studied the information, they have very specific, very targeted linear techniques for using Facebook to get a very specific type of targeted traffic. But they're, they have a specific goal and purpose in mind, and they'll release content specifically about that with the intent for it to go viral within Facebook and bring the traffic back to their page, back to their opt-in form, et cetera. So that's about all I can say about it. I don't know, Gideon, if you have more.
Yeah, I mean, the only other thing I could think of is, other than the strategies that Yara already mentioned, is to look at the advertising function inside Facebook and use that to drive traffic back to your blog. Now, the only issue with that is that, of course, you're not necessarily going to make any sales from it, but you can perhaps get some traffic from it. And the other thing that I've noticed about Facebook advertising is that when people are on Facebook, they're in a different mindset than they are, say, on Google. When they're on Facebook, they're there to pretty much socialize with their mates. And when on Google, they're more there for research or for looking for stuff to buy. And so, you could spend money on advertising to get traffic back. That's the only other thing I could think of for using Facebook in a way to get traffic back to your blog.
But honestly, I wouldn't use that myself personally, unless you've got a lot of money to burn, you really want to get traffic back to your site. But I think there are better ways of doing it than that.
Right. Okay. That's great.
No problem, Lou. Is there anything else we can add to that, or?
No, that was just one of my anxieties and trying to be creative with what I've got so far or what I've built up so far. But you wouldn't say there are big hazards or dangers of diversion or distraction from your blog if you used Facebook improperly or if you played it wrong. You wouldn't say there is that big of a hazard in that area.
Yeah, the only thing I can think of is, you should put your content on your blog first and then use Facebook as a syndication tool rather than the other way around. Don't put your content on Facebook and not anywhere else and make only Facebook your central hub. That's the risk, I think, that some people might fall into. And, you don't control the tool then, so that's a bit dangerous. And if Facebook changes their system or doesn't like what you're doing, they delete your account, then you're in trouble.
Right, of course. Okay, yes, makes a lot of sense. Thank you.
No problem. Okay, thanks for your questions, Lou. I'll move on. There's no more hands raised. I'm going to move on to the last forum question. But if anyone is listening in the call and you do want to have another question or maybe ask your first question, just press *9 on your telephone or your Skype dial pad and your hand will go up. And we'll attempt to answer the last remaining questions. And if not, we'll wrap up the call. But I'll just move on to the forum and do that last one. I think this is definitely a question for Mr. Shawick. This is from Amy. Amy asks, "Hey there, wondering if there are any microphones you recommend in the US 100 or under range. Thanks, Amy."
The short answer is probably no. But... that's because I'm biased. I'm really particular about my sound because I truly believe that if you've got good sound, whether it's for an audio product or a video product, the quality of your production is just so much better. And so I truly believe that if you invest a bit more money in a really good microphone, that your end result will help pay it off for you. I've had so many compliments now that people think my voice is like hot chocolate or stuff like that. and I'm thinking, I just have a normal voice, but what I do have is a really good microphone. And trust me, before I had this microphone, I did not get those comments. It's gone as far as even that my voice is now on a vocal trance podcast that goes out to tens of thousands of people every week, so my voice is famous just because of my microphone.
So it's clearly gone to your head too, Gideon.
Yeah, I'm very proud of the podcasting. But anyway, if you are on a tough budget, there are some other options that are okay that I wouldn't cringe as much to recommend. One is the microphone from Genius. It's a USB microphone. It's still around. It doesn't actually have a model name or model number or anything like that. It's a very simple and straightforward USB microphone that you plug into the USB port on your computer. I think they're about $50, and they do an okay job. That's what I used before the microphone that I have now. And in fact, that's what I used to create the initial Become a Blogger videos. And it did an okay job. But once again, because it was a cheaper mic, they couldn't spend some good money on the hardware for it. And so the quality and the depth of the sound was just not as good. So that's something to think about. The Genius mic. I was trying to think if there's anything else under $100. If you paid just a little bit more, I think, I don't know how much it is in the US, but the Snowball microphone from Blue, I think the company's called Blue. If you just do a Google search for Snowball microphone, it's the same microphone that Yarrow has. I've recommended this microphone to a lot of people, and it's not that much more than $100. So I'm thinking if you are keen for some good sound, that would be a pretty good option.
I'm using it right now, actually, so.
Yes, and I've actually been really impressed. I think the sound is very similar to the microphone that I've got, which is more expensive. And the one that I'm using is a Rode Podcaster microphone. It's R-O-D-E. But that's a little bit more expensive. And I think they manufacture them here in Australia, and that's why they're more expensive too. But the Snowball mic is a great mic. Callie Lewis recommends that one as well. She loves it. And she's got a huge show, a huge following online. I can't think of anything else, because and the reason probably is because I haven't really looked at microphones in that sort of price range, just because my experience with them has been that they're not that great. But by all means, test them out. Probably one of the best bit of advice I can give you, if you want to go on a budget for those microphones under $100, is to test them before you buy them. If you can somehow take your laptop in with you and test them in the shop, or ask the shop owner if you can take them home, test them, and if it's not what you want, if you could bring them back and get a refund. I've done that so many times now with different pieces of equipment, and the shop owners get annoyed with me because I would sometimes go back 5 times until I'm happy with what I want to get. But that's what you got to do if you want to be the leader, if you want to get the best results for what you do online. That's it for me.
Okay. Good stuff. Thank you, Amy, for your question. That's all the forum questions done. I'm just going to jump back to the live questions. We've got Monique again, so I'm going to reply to, we'll have Monique live on the call again. And if that's it, we'll wrap up the call after Monique's question. So here we go.
Hi, again.
How lucky you get twice.
I know. This is amazing. Oh, my goodness. Okay, I wrote down a couple other things that I want to ask. Since the last call, you posted an interview with James Schramko, correct?
Correct.
Now, I remember him saying something about he had a lot of stuff that he does, like as far as his streams of income. But I remember him saying something about him offering live, like event planning services. Was that correct?
I'm not sure if it's services. It could be, because James is the kind of guy who'll do something, do it well, and then start selling it as a service, but have other people do it. So he's definitely had some great success selling from the stage. He spent a good part of last year doing that and perfecting his technique. So he definitely has a lot of experience at live events. And now he runs only a couple of events a year, and they're all his own stuff. Like, they're not from other people. So I think there's a good chance that, yeah, he does something like that. Worth getting in touch with James, though. He's very contactable, and he'll reply to you. So
how did you – okay, did you talk to him at the Ed Dale event? Is that how you landed the interview?
It's not the first time. James actually was speaking in Brisbane, and I was attending at the event, and someone came and introduced me to him, and James had been reading my blog for a long time, and I didn't actually know him at the time. So that was the first time we met, and we had a brief conversation then. And then I started to look into his work a bit more and noticed he was speaking at everything that year. So when it came down to Ed Dale's event, we actually had a dinner for, a lot of people, actually half the event were actually at the dinner. And I was sitting next to James and finally got to have his full story and hear what he's doing. And as you could tell from the interview, he does so many different things, it's kind of hard to put it all together in your head. So I still don't quite understand exactly what he does, but I have a rough idea. And he told me such a great story in person that I asked if we could just sort of repeat it on that interview, and that's what we did.
Okay. So there wasn't any, like, when the call ended, is that where the conversation ended? Like, did you explore any more with him about, because I know you were trying to keep time, like, so it wasn't too long for us to listen to, but did you have, like, a more extended conversation about his?
Oh, we did. Nothing to do with events. We talked just mostly about blogging and what he's doing in that area, and how he's doing all kinds of stuff, outsourcing, how he hires people, those sort of things. More what I was interested in, because I was interested in how he built his team and how he coordinates things and how he's doing what he's doing with blogging, because he's doing a bit more in some things that I don't do. Like, he's doing a lot of, like, after content marketing stuff that I haven't done, so I want to learn what he was doing there. So that's what we talked about. But, it's like two friends talking over coffee. It kind of goes all over the place.
What do you mean by after content marketing?
Oh, well, just James is doing a lot of post-publishing syndication using outsources. So, for example, when you publish a blog post, he actually has a team. Like, so this is for his blog. When he writes a blog post, it goes live to his blog, and that's usually where I stop. You know, I'll tweet it. It'll go automatically to my Facebook profile, and my blog posts will get syndicated that way. So I get the traffic from my blog. I'll get the traffic from Twitter, from Facebook. And if it's one of my more substantial articles, I'll actually send it to my email list as well. And that's the extent of the marketing I pretty much do for my content. And that's great. I'm sort of leveraging what I already have in an audience. But James is coming to it from a place where he doesn't have a built-up blog audience. He's going through the momentum building process. But he's so good at using outsources. He has them do things like when an article is published on his blog, he will have his content writing outsource team take the ideas in the article and write new articles and then syndicate those articles on article marketing sites, having those articles linked back to his blog post. He'll have his video creation team create video content based on that article and link that video back to that blog post from within YouTube, but it'll also use syndication services to get it on the other video sites as well. So he just does a lot of link building. And that's it's automated, but it's costing money because his outsourcers are doing it for him. But it's helping his blog rank quickly and grow quite quickly. And he's getting a lot of leverage from other people as a result of doing that. So I was just interested to learn what he's doing there.
Oh, okay. Okay. That's really interesting. Wow. Wow. He's got like a little army like building in links for him like that?
Pretty much. A lot of the top marketers do this. They're not writers. You know, they're just strong points, not content creation. So they need to get as much as they can out of their automation tools. So they'll have their outsources just use as much syndication and technique as they can to build links, even when the content isn't, you know, the absolute best thought-leading type of content out there, which is kind of like what I've focused on.
Okay. Then I have another issue. Since the last call, like, I was having, like, a really tough time, like, with the Monique Waite blog. Like, it didn't take long to get it up, but I just, like, wanted to have my own, like, personal graphics. And I guess I look at Maria Andros and, like, Carrie Wilkerson and, like, Lisa Sasevich and, you know, how they have their blogs and it's personal branded and they have their opt-in boxes, like, at the top of their blogs. And I wanted to have, like, graphics and stuff like that, but I had a really tough time, like, trying to find, like, a reliable person to, like, just do the graphics. Like, where do you go, or do you have that issue, or is that something that you're working on? Because I know you've been posting blog posts about that, changing your outsourcing strategy. Mm. Can you give me some insight on that? You and Gideon as well, because I see, Gideon, you're changing some of your graphics on your blog, too. So I see you're kind of going through the same thing. Sort of.
Yeah. Oh, you want to go first, Gideon?
Yeah, I guess mine's pretty straightforward. I've got one person that I've hired full time to do all my tech work for me, and that's truly been a huge thing for me to get progress done. I mean, I started off with this stuff, learning everything from scratch, doing everything myself. You know, I did all the graphics myself. I used to do all the graphics myself. I used to create all the HTML pages. I used to set up all the blogs all myself. And while that was good to get an understanding for how everything works and learning the ins and outs so that if you know, so that I know what I'm talking about, it's not a good place to stay in. And so that's why I started hiring this one person from the Philippines. His name is Chris. And so now he does all that stuff for me. So that just totally frees me up. I also now source out a lot of my project management and video editing stuff, and that's actually going to my wife at the moment. So she's going through that process now, sort of a learning process. But the idea is that we'll get to a stage where she can then teach another person that can be the project manager and, you know, there'll be a video editor. But I'm at the stage now where I can pretty much just rock up for the content creation. I can just turn up in front of the camera and do my thing, and then everything else happens. I can just talk to Chris and say, hey, Chris, I wanted this new blog to be set up, and I want it to look like this, and it needs to have these graphics. You go away and do it. And you know, that helps me progress through what I want to do just so much quicker.
And it's, you know, as you can hear, it's not complicated. It's I don't have a huge team of people. I just have, it's me, Chris, and my wife at the moment, and you know, other things like some copywriting. I source that out as well now. Once again, just frees me up. But I've, in terms of full-time people, I've got Chris, and then my wife helps me out as well, and because we both work from home now. So that's pretty much my team, and it's going really well. And I think we talked about this earlier as well. You take things in step. You know, I started off doing everything myself, but now that I understand everything in the business, I can start sourcing out. You know, I can figure out what are all the different responsibilities in my business. You know, I create a big mind map with all the different responsibilities in my business. This is a Rich Sheffrin tip. And I color code everything. And at the beginning, everything had my color on it. And what Rich Sheffrin talks about is the aim of that is to get rid of your own color and to basically color it in with other people's colors in the end. In my particular case, I'll probably always have some color in there for myself because, that's the model that I'm going for. But a lot of the other stuff I'm getting other people to do now, which is really, really good. And Yaro's been doing that. Well, he'll talk about that more, but he's been doing that to a certain degree. But now he's now also moving more into getting full-time people for the outsourcing, which is, I'll leave Yaro to talk about that.
Now, before Yaro starts, did you get Chris from like online jobs.ph?
Kind of. I went through John Jonas. He uses that service, I think. But what he had was he had a short list of people that he already found. I was in a hurry. I didn't want to muck around and spend weeks trying to find someone. I just paid the money to get access to the short list. And the first person that I tried was not successful. It was, the person was just too demanding. And in the end, I just said no. You know, I don't want to, I want my life to be easier, not harder. And then the next person was Chris, and he was just fantastic from day one. So, yeah.
So did Chris put on that expandable text plugin for you as well? Did he put that on there for you? Like for your transcription of the videos?
Yes, he did. I would have originally found that transcript, but he now, for any new blogs that I have, he just installs the blog and puts all the plugins that I need that I tell him to install. So it's pretty cool.
Does Chris do the transcription as well?
No, I did get Chris to do some of the transcription, but I think I'm a strong believer in letting people focus on what they're good at. And his strength is not transcription. So I'm leaving him for the graphic design and the technical stuff. And then the transcription, I source it out to someone else.
Okay. So they're on a project basis?
Yes. So every time I have a new video or a new audio, I send it off to the lady's called Becky. She's amazing. I really recommend her service as well. It's I think it's Words Into Profits. .com is her website if you're interested in transcription.
Yeah, because I have that naturally speaking thing, and it takes a minute to get the video transcribed and all that good stuff. Yeah. So, okay, that's very, very helpful. Okay, Yaro, chime in.
Who's leading this call now, Aaron?
I'm sorry, I'm just so hyper.
That's all right. So in my history, I've, like Gideon, I started off doing it all myself and did that for a long time, probably 5 years. And a lot of the projects I was doing at the time, though, weren't money-making projects, and I just slowed myself down tremendously. And eventually, though, I hired my first person was my email person, Angela. She's been dealing with the email now for several years for me and then sort of branched out into a few other things. When I did the first launch I ever did for Blog Mastermind, I wanted to have a team with me then because I just knew I couldn't do certain things. So I went to a lot of people close to me here in Brisbane, actually, and said, all right, I need a tech person, I need a graphic designer, I need an affiliate manager, I need a customer support person. So I just went crazy, and it was a mistake because I took on people I didn't really need for the launch, and I was also very ambiguous about the remuneration because I was trying to incentivize with the launch, depending on how the launch went, because I knew that was a good practice. But turned out to be a little bit too ambiguous. We didn't really nut out the details about who was getting paid what, and I was paying everyone a guaranteed hourly rate no matter what, and I was hiring locally, so it was actually costing quite a lot, but I was expecting the launch to do certain numbers. Long story short, it worked out well, and we all got a benefit from doing it together, but I definitely learned certain things I wouldn't do the same way. One of the big things being you can get these sort of skills from overseas and even from not necessarily full-time people. You can get the skills just from, like, for example, banners. We go to bannersmall.com, and for $100 you get all your banners done. Simple. That's for affiliate programs and things like that. So what happened then after that is I kept a couple of tech people around me, and they were on an hourly contract basis, so I just communicate them with Skype, and they do the work, and they invoice me every week or month depending on how they worked, and that was okay, but it was very haphazard, and in my case it was okay, especially because I wasn't doing anything significantly new. So we had a formula that worked, which is exactly what I teach in Membership Site Mastermind. So as long as you can get a landing page done, a blog done, and a membership site done, and all these things can be done, well, at least two of them can be done with WordPress, the membership site, and the blog. So that's quite easy to set up. And, it'll take a contractor only a couple of hours to get it done, and away you go. Long story short, it doesn't then require that a full-time person to do that. So I was still using the same people. And then a couple of years ago, when I had my blog redesigned, it was done by Nate from Unique Blog Designs, and they were being very, very clever, actually quite tactical, and going out to all the most popular bloggers and doing free designs for them in exchange for basically getting promotions. So they did a design for me, and of course I raved about Nate and promoted their theme launches. So it's a great tactic for them. Yes, they had to do free work, but they got a lot of exposure and built huge preeminence as a result of that, and then made a lot of money selling their own themes. So that worked really well. However, with Nate, he still actually does things for me from actual blog, but I kind of, you can only stretch a relationship based on free labor for too long. We haven't really defined the criteria behind it, and I don't feel comfortable always taking, free work. So I want to have my own team. And long story short, I'm at a bit of a transition point with what I'm doing. I've got my courses online. They're great. They sell. I'm happy with them. And that's all done. I'm not, in a sense, creating new courses now along the same pathway. I want to get into maybe software. I still want to do some information products, but they'll be with partnerships, kind of like with Gideon and I did. So I just want to have a team around me, and that's why we're hiring a graphics person. We're hiring a coder who's good at like doing website layout and blog layout, that sort of thing. I want to get a video person. I want to get people do the stuff like we talked about with James. So I want to have a little team of link builders working behind the scenes and just get all this done and managed by a team leader as well. So I can say, listen, we're rolling out a new information product. We need the landing page done. We need the logos done. We need the banners done. We need the affiliate promotional tools done. I add that all into Basecamp. The team leader then assigns all the projects to the right people, coordinates it, gets it done. I check over it whenever I need to, and it's done. And that's amazing leverage. It really destroys the roadblocks that stop you from doing multiple projects at once. And if you look at what the top internet marketers do in our space, it's nothing different from what you or I might do, except they've got 20 projects all happening at the same time because they've got a team around them and they can roll them out one after the other after the other. And I know from our experience, Gideon and I, pretty much every launch we've done has made between $50,000 and $150,000. But we'll do that every 3 months, 6 months, something like that. And if you're really on top of your game, you could roll out one of those once a month. And that's how these guys start making $100,000 a month, $1 million a year, and further. So further on, of course, their expenses go up too. There's more to coordinate, and you're creating a bigger company. But that's the basic principle: just doing more of what works using help. And that's there's a time and a place to do that. I haven't wanted to recently, but now I it's the right time to do so, and the information's there to learn from, and that's what I'm doing.
Okay. I really, really appreciate that because I just got so frustrated because I had, I try to be loyal to the person. If I go to somebody like for a logo or a banner or whatever, like I try to go back to that person, but I don't know. It just seems like they just keep dropping like flies. Like I don't I don't know what's going on. Like I'm just trying to find like a reliable person. So Maybe I need to go at least get somebody part-time, something.
There's a little phrase that Eben Pagan uses that I really, really love, and he says, hire slowly and fire fast. And the idea behind it is that, you know, make sure that when you do hire someone, if you want to hire someone part-time or full-time, that they're the right person. Because it's difficult to get rid of people, you know, easily and in a nice way if they're not performing. And so if you can find the right people, also, you know, do whatever you can to keep them on, you know, create incentives for them, make their life enjoyable, you know, make it fun for them to work on your projects. Because that one person, if you've got that good relationship with them, can save you an awful lot of time. Because every time you go to find a new person, this is
new. That takes time.
It takes time to search for them and to get used to them and to get to know their work, to know if they're trustworthy, all this stuff. So, I mean, you know, if you can find like a part-time person or a full-time person, you can afford it. It can help you a lot. The challenge then becomes in making sure you've got enough work for that person. And, you know, if you don't have enough work for that person, they can get bored and they want to move on. So that becomes the next challenge. But, yeah, these are all nice and wonderful things you can think about as you grow your business.
Okay. I really, really appreciate that because I was so frustrated. I was ready to scream. But, you know, it'll be all right. I'll just keep chugging away. I'll just keep chugging away. So, okay, I'm assuming somebody's after me. So thanks again, guys. I really appreciate it.
No problem, Monique. Well, we might actually wrap up the call. So thanks. Great stuff, Monique. I think you got some interesting information for everyone else on the call too. So I'm sure they appreciated that. I've got no more hands raised and I've got no more forum questions. And I think that's a good time to end the call. So Gideon, any final words before we execute you?
Yes, one final word. As always, take action. You don't get results unless you take action, and you will get either good or bad results. If they're bad, you know, you're on the wrong track, and you just need to fix that. If you get good results, you just keep going, but you won't get those results unless you take action. Those are my 2 cents worth of motivational talk. All the best, and I'll talk to you next month.
Confucius say, huh, Gideon?
That's the one.
Yeah. No, good advice. I hope everyone enjoyed the call and got something from that. The recording will be up in the next couple of hours once I've had a chance to upload it. And I look forward to speaking to everyone on the next call we have, which is already scheduled in the teleconferences page. So hopefully you can make the call. Now, as a tradition, I'm going to unmute the line. So everyone on the call, you're welcome to say goodbye and shout out hello or thank you, whatever you feel like. And that will be it. Thanks, everyone, for your time. And I'll speak to you very soon.
Thanks, everybody.
All right, everyone's live. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Yaro.
Bye. Bye, guys.
Bye.
The moderator has disconnected. The call will now end.